this shit. Yeah, okay. Cool. Can you hear me? Yeah, okay. Sorry for the delay. I had to, like, it was just, like, bullshit with parking and stuff, so I had to download the app and do all this, all of these things, so hopefully won't happen again. Yeah. Well, I guess we lost a few since yesterday, but yeah, that's not too bad. But, so today, so yesterday we went over, like, the theoretical stuff. Today we'll start a bit on some more, like, practical things, so you actually have some frame of reference to what the hell is a database, as opposed to just me being like, yeah, it's a base of data. So, yeah, I'll give you an introduction to that stuff, and then and some more boring words. So, assignment has been published on Blackboard, the first one. It's group 2. You can register yourselves as well on Blackboard. That should be set up and working fine. If you can't, send me an email or complain to one of the PAs or something. Yeah, we also need to set up the course feedback thing, the student reference group or whatever that is, so you can complain over the semester about what's going wrong with this course. And the guidelines I've been given is one student per study group, so everybody can complain equally and have their rights. So are representatives of each of the courses or degrees here, or BWU, there's some students, economics, and then geomatics. Anyone here? Or they all dropped out? No. Okay. Cool. Do any of you be part of this thing? You have to be. Sucks for you, but yeah. I'll either like force you to be a part of this, so you could just take it like random, or I don't know. You need to figure that out. I can. I'll give you the break to discuss this among yourselves to see who is like the lucky chosen person to be a part of this thing, and then towards like the end of the class, you can tell me, or after the break or something. but yeah, okay. That's the bureaucracy out of the way. So I guess we can just start. For the people that went to the lab yesterday, actually had room to be in the lab yesterday, I'm guessing you've already like installed stuff and have gotten like the database running and stuff, or? Yeah. 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 Great planning by Antinia. Yeah. So we'll like, you have to give me like constant feedback on this, because if it's like, if it's full both days and some of you can't attend both days, then you have to do something about it. Okay. Yeah, that's where everybody go. Okay. Yeah. But if not, like, this can't happen. It's retarded if people, like, can't, like, come to the labs because the room is too small. So we'll do something about it if it's a problem. But it doesn't actually matter. But all the stuff I'm going to show you today is based off of, or have to have the stuff installed to understand what's going on. You'll understand it afterwards when you go to the lab. But it's just so it's a bit more like contextualized, and it's a bit more like some relation between what we're teaching here and what is happening in labs, because in a lot of classes, like, there's no relationship at all. And then students are like, oh, what is this? This is completely different from what I've learned in the lecture. So I'll try and use the same everything that you will use in the assignments and in the labs and in the lectures. So yeah, I'll give you like a brief introduction to like MySQL and how to like interact with the database and what is going on there. Yeah, so relational databases. This is like the way of making or creating databases. It's a structure that permeates through like most mainstream databases, which is you have relations, which are tables, kind of like Excel tables, right? And then you have attributes, which are the columns of those tables. And each of those like represent field of the data that's relative to a row, which is an entry data. And then you have the domain, which is the data type of the attributes. Are they numbers? Are they strings? Are they dates? Are they something else? The degree, so the number of attributes in a relationship. So this is the number of columns, so how much data is it related to each of the data rows. Cardinality, which is in a table, it's how many rows there are, so how much data there is in that table. And then the relational database is like this collection of tables that all relate to each other and have data. So this is a bit more visual. Have a relation, which is a table, and then each of the relations has a name. It has the multiple attributes. So a student has a name and a social security number, home phone. Tuples are, or rows are, each of the entities of data present in that degree, so number of columns, and then cardinality, the number of rows. So relational keys. To identify each of the rows of data, we need an identifier, which kind of is an easy way to reference that row or that specific data. A primary key is something that has to be unique, and that identifies that specific tuple. So it could be like a name. The problem is like, what if people have a name? Then that doesn't really work out. And then you're like, oh, which one is Benjamin Byer? Which one of them is that person? So what we usually do is have like something that can be unique, like an email. Usually if you're registering users, that's why you can't like reuse emails. And that's usually only refers to one person. Only one person uses an email. Or it can be like a system generated. So it can be like a random like string of characters that the computer generates, or it can be the row number, or the we can store sequential number associated with the table, and then that gets incremented every time you add a row, and then that's an easy way to make sure like there's no repetition because it's always like +1, +1. And if you delete one of the rows of the data that isn't reused, you just keep on adding one. So you might have holes in between, but that's fine. What we out is that it's unique. And then you have keys. So this is when we have references across tables. So say, for example, if we have a employee, that employee is going to be related to a department, right? And instead of duplicating the data or having a lot of weird connections between them, we can use IDs or the primary key of each of these tables to signify this relation, so like a link. So in a practical sense, we have a simple relation, which is like the department. The department has an ID. And then if we want to refer to a department in another table, we can use that ID to refer to a department in the employee table, for example. And that makes it like fairly easy to go back and forth and figure out what that department is. Because say if we're using like email or something that is more complex, then it's like a bit harder for a human to find, as opposed to just being like, oh, 90. That's easy to do. Just like go to the table. Yeah, okay. Kind of said all of this already. Yeah. So there are a lot of different like database management systems, like I mentioned yesterday. They range from like super simple to extremely complex. And this is an introduction course, so we're starting with like the super simple. For super simple, like the easier alternatives are like MySQL and MariaDB. These are you're going to use MySQL in the assignments and stuff. So that so that's what we'll use here too, for when I'm walking through like in the lectures and stuff. But that's whatever's underneath, right? Like that's all the magic that is hidden away. Usually you need some sort of front end where you're like interacting with the database. Back in the day, it just used to be like a console window that you just like typed commands in. Well, you can still do that. A lot of people do it. They're like opposed to change or something. So they just use the console and write the commands, and then they get the data in some like black and white console window. We're going to use a something that's a bit more user-friendly, which is PMyAdmin. It's a bit more convenient as well because you can do a lot of stuff without actually like using the commands. Just the UI gives it to you. So this is how it looks like for the people that haven't installed it yet. But hopefully you'll get that sorted in the lab today. And then the database system needs to run somewhere. And what we usually do is just create a local server. And then the database is running there, and then you make queries and requests up against that server. This is like a bit technical. We're not really going to go too much in depth into this. But this is what we'll use over the semester. So yeah, for the people that have experience with programming, if you'd like to know the concepts of like types of languages, but procedural languages is probably the stuff that you're used to, like PHP, JavaScript, C++, all that stuff, where you're telling the computer how to do things to get to a certain objective. Do you write a series of commands that the computer can understand? Like, oh, get me data at position something, and then add number to it, or do some stuff. SQL is a declarative language where we're not telling the computer how to do it, we're telling it what to do. So we're just like, oh, give me all the rows that have an ID above 10, and then the computer does its magic and retrieves all the rows. But it's so it's a bit of a different paradigm than what you're used to. Whatever is underneath is just like magic. It gets abstracted away from the user. That's the whole like concept of how SQL works. You just telling the computer what you want from it, and then it just does its own thing. So what we'll go over is so the data manipulation language for SQL, which is all the commands that affect the data or interact with it. So retrieving data, inserting, updating data that's already there, and deleting. But also the data definition language, which is all the commands that affect the structure of the database. So you can add tables, you can modify, add more columns, add relations between the tables, all that stuff. Then we also have the system catalog, which is a description of all the stored data in the database. And that's what types are in the columns and all that stuff. So HR, that is the there's a SQL file in Blackboard that creates a database that has, if it's not this exact schema, it's very close. And that is, this is usually how you describe a database from like the conceptual standpoint. So you have a square that defines like what a table is going to be and what the columns of that table is going to be, and then you have like the relationships mapped out, lines between those tables. So these are repeated. So writing SQL statements. I'll show you these like now. Yeah. Can I? So this is how, is this like big enough? So this is how your like PHP MyAdmin is going to look. You import the SQL file that is in Blackboard. So you're going to have a database that's called HR, and then you're going to have like a bunch of different tables. And those tables are going to have columns and data. So like fancy Excel. And then when you have this that is just given to you, then you can do queries up against this data to maybe filter the data, or like get a different view of what the data is. Because if you click on it, you have, you know, a department and the department name, but then you have like these IDs. So what if, you know, like you want to have like the location that is associated with the department, instead of going to the table and checking really what it is, the computer can do that. So writing SQL statements, first of all, they're not sensitive, but usually when people are writing SQL statements, they use uppercase for all the keywords that are used, so it always looks like you're screaming at the computer. So if you want to select everything from table, you do this. And would it even work? Okay. And then you get the same as if it's you're selecting or browsing to the table. So, and SQL statements can be in one or more lines. So you can do it like, or you can do it like this. It doesn't matter. It's whatever looks the best for you. You can understand what is going on. So it's usually like, and as the line starts being a bit too long, then you just can just change it to a new line. So keywords can't be abbreviated or split. You can't have this. You can't have like this. Select. So clauses are usually in different lines. So select and from. Like you can do this, but it's more common to do this because usually you can also select just specific columns, and then you just have like a huge list of the columns you want. So they would either be, it would look kind of weird, and you would know when these columns start and finish if you're just having them like next to each other like this. And it's common enough to have, you know, 10, 15 or more columns when you start actually using proper data. Then you can also use indents to improve readability. I don't care if it's like tabs or spaces, but you can use it like this so you can actually see that, like, okay, you're selecting and you're selecting a bunch of different columns, and then the from is in a different vertical space. So you can do projection, which is you're just selecting a few of the columns. So if you have a table with like 10 columns, you can just select like a couple of them. You can do selection, which is you're selecting specific rows of that table, depending on what you filter the data on. Say like if you're filtering on students, filter on like, you know, what their age is, for example. And then you can do joins, which is when we have those foreign keys that reference different tables, you can join the tables to get like all the data in one row. That's a bunch of different examples, so I'll just do that live. So this is the layout of a select statement. You don't usually use all this all the time. It depends on from use case to use case. So you're selecting, and then you have a column list, and then you're selecting from a table, where is when you want to filter on specific rows or attributes of that data, and then you can group that data by something, and then filter on those groupings, and then order it somehow. So I'll give you a few examples of how to do this. I can stop now. Any questions or anything that doesn't make any sense or good? Okay. So, selecting. You can do select where you get everything, so every column of that table. So you're selecting a column list from a table. And when you want just every column, you can use the star symbol, multiplication symbol, and then you just get everything. So you get this. Say you only want the names of the regions, you can do name. Oh shit. They always have like different notes for different, like, how do I select or what is a string? So just need to figure out what that is. Region name. So it's the backwards tilde for some reason. Good luck finding that on your keyboard. And so I'm only using the region name, so then only the region name shows up. If I have multiple columns, say where it is, start date and end date. I can do so start date and then comma end date and something from job history, and then you just do columns instead of everything. So a lot of times you need to like restrict what you want to show, because say if you have like 10, 15, 20 columns, then it's become too like cumbersome to work with all that data all the time. It's also less performant. But sometimes you want all of the columns, and then there's a trade-off there. Should I just type out all the column names, or should I just use the this notation just to make it easier? And that kind of depends on like situation to situation, because if somebody renames like columns in the database, you won't really like catch it until you use that data somewhere. If you just have this notation, because you're just getting everything from the database, and it's like, oh, you know. Just give me whatever. But if you're integrating this against like some code in the back end, and your back end assumes a column is going to have like a certain name, and then it doesn't, then you're gonna run into errors. So it kind of depends on where you want to run into those errors. But yeah. Well, yeah, because that is going to happen if somebody is going to like change the schema of the database, right? And you kind of like expect a data field to like have a specific name, right? And then you're like, that is already like hard coded or like code. And then if somebody changes it, well, then they're like, ah, whatever, this is going to like handle like fixing the back end for this. Yeah, it's gonna crap out. So then it like depends or like where you want to crop out, and that's also like depends on like what language you're using, how like that specific framework handles like queries to the database, all that stuff. But it is not ideal that those problems happen during, right? right? When like a user starts using your application and then like, oh, it broke and I don't know why. So yeah, but this is something you'll learn as well when you start like integrating servers against a database. Yeah, you can also use mathematical operators. So let me find something that has a number. Minimum salary, maximum salary. Okay. So if you're doing this, you get like minimum salary, maximum salary. But then if you just want the minimum salary, you get this, but then you can also do it so you add 1,000 to everybody's salary when you're retrieving. This won't change like the underlying data, but when you're retrieving the data, you can process it so it's easier, so you don't have to do those operations somewhere else. So you can do additions and subtractions, multiplications, divisions, all that stuff. That's how you'd filter the data. The person that didn't like math yesterday, that's the extent of like how much math you're going to use in this course. So if you see this side by side, can do like comma. You need a comma between the columns. So yeah, this is minimum salary, this is minimum salary plus something else. I hope you remember like what the order of operations is, right? Like multiplication comes before addition always, right? If you do this, what do you get? It's first you multiply and then you add. The same here. And then parentheses also help. And work. It's not like all those shitty like Facebook memes and stuff that nobody gets it right in the comments. Yeah. Order of operations, parentheses, that's all like normal. And then let me see in the data set if there's anything. Can I multiply from? You can multiply. So if you have, let me go back to the, oh, I lost the thingy. Okay. Was it jobs history? Yeah. So if I had another column, I could multiply both columns and have the. So if I could, I can do, for example, it's min salary, max salary. So I can do min salary and max salary. And then I can also do like max salary minus min sorry. And then you get the range of that salary, right? And you can also just like rename that column. You can do as, and then salary range. So you can process the data like this. It doesn't affect the underlying data, right? Like the data that's stored in the table is still the same. You're just changing how you view it. No, then it has to be different queries, but you can update the table afterwards, add another column, and then calculate that. But an important thing with databases is that they should maintain like data integrity, and there shouldn't be like any duplicate data. So you only store the stuff that you need, and everything else can be processed afterwards, right? So for a salary range, for example, that's something that can be processed in like a select statement, as opposed to actually storing that in the database, because it's fairly easy to like figure out what the range is. You can have different views of that table, which are basically like stored select statements. Because, say, for example, when I'm clicking away in countries and departments and stuff like that, what I'm actually doing is I'm making a request to the database that has select all the columns for this table, right? So I'm actually making like the query that I'm making here. The front or this program is doing the same to the database. And then what views are is basically storing like this select statement, for example, and making that request to the database of like show me the data based on this query, right? So usually you don't store derived data, so like this data dependent on what the max salary and min salary is, because that can create sources of conflict. Say somebody comes in and changes what the data in the database is. So they come in and change salary range to be like 10,000. But then that is not going to be consistent with what the minimum salary is and what the maximum salary is. So you're going to have like this conflict. And then you don't really know like what the source of truth is, right? Is it, should we take the salary range and update the minimum salary and the maximum salary? Or should we take the minimum salary and maximum salary and update the range to make it consistent? And a very important concept in databases is that like your data should always be consistent. It shouldn't have, there shouldn't be any doubt about what is going on in the database, right? Did I answer your question, or was it like a very big sidestep on the? Yeah. Okay. No. Usually, you're storing like the basic facts, and then all that can be inferred from that data is calculated after the fact. Like salary range, for example. There are some exceptions and some like complex situations where that is needed, say for to like improve performance, right? Because if calculating a salary range was some like hugely complex mathematical operation that took the computer like 2 minutes to do, then it's better to store that and then update when the data that it's dependent on changes.
So you, the
yeah, as a calc, then you have like different methods to like try to ensure that works properly. Yeah, they do, but they're prone to failure. Like, they're introducing like possible failure to your database as opposed to just doing the simple thing. But it's always like a trade-off with everything you do. Should it be like less prone to failure but be less performant, or can we corner somewhere to make sure that this is happening like super quick, right? Because as I said, if it took like 2 minutes to calculate a salary range and you're going to like for every row of the database, and you're going like your client is going to wait for like 10 minutes, 20 minutes for like a query to resolve, and that's not, you're not going to like sit on a website like for 20 minutes for stuff to happen, right? So as the use cases become more and more complex, the solutions become more and more complex. But that's maybe out of the scope of this subject. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. So the next thing is knowledge use. So we have some examples here of commission percentage. So there are situations where data specific rows doesn't have to exist, right? People don't have managers, they're already at the top of the food chain. So when we represent data that doesn't necessarily exist for that specific row, that is represented by null. For a primary key, you can, there are restrictions that null can't be used for a primary key. No, you can't insert that data into the data. What usually happens is when you're inserting, say to employees, you don't actually specify the ID. You just let the database autocomplete that, because the table is going to have an internal counter that keeps track of what was the last ID that was used, and then it's going to add one. So that is all handled internally, so you don't actually specify the ID for that employee, like the database assigns it itself. So it is, say for example, say when we're using like login, right, like to log into a website, every user needs to have an email and needs to have a password. Then we can like mandate, well, there can't be a user without an email or a password, because how are they going to log in? So that can be like a restraint when we're adding the table. This column cannot be null when you're adding data into the database. But other columns maybe don't really matter, or maybe like rows don't really need to have that, like an employee doesn't need to have a manager, then we can just be like, okay, it can be null. Yeah, we can try. So if we do, I'll just copy this query. So if we're selecting employees, manager, this is another notation you can use when you're selecting columns. You can add the table name before the column. And this is used, for example, when we're joining different columns to know what column we're referring to. Because, say, for example, we have an employee that has a name and a department that has a name, then if we just had like name here, we wouldn't know what we're referring to. So you can pre-put the table name. So when you do this, then you get all the manager's ID, manager IDs, including the null one, because we're selecting all the manager IDs, and that comes. So that comes next. It is. Oh, it doesn't actually come next in the slide. So, skipping ahead. No. So if we want to select, that is where the where part of. Where was it? This. This is where the where part of this statement comes in. So where is to restrict what data, or to filter what data should be shown. So it would be where manager ID MySQL does this, or is it is, yeah, not null. Then null is gone, and then if you do is null, then you just get the null one. So this is how you do it. So it's is not null and is null. And if you want to restrict on something else, these are numbers, should work. So you can restrict. Manager IDs that are above 100, you can do manager IDs that are equal to 102, so what employees are under a specific manager.
So
there's
the manager IDs are, like, computers, right?
Are in
numbers, right?
Yeah.
What happens if I have a string?
Then you can't use the arithmetic operators of like bigger and smaller. But you can, if you create an employee that has a manager that is a string, yeah, then you can't add that data because it's not valid. When you're adding data into the database, it's going to check if it has the correct data type. And if you're adding data that is actually, that is a foreign key that refers to another table, then it the database is going to check see if that foreign key that you're inserting is corresponds to a primary key in the other table, right? So if we're adding Stephen King and it has a department ID of 90, when it's getting inserted, the database is going to check, is there a department with an ID of 90? And if yes, then it's going to be, okay, that's fine. But if not, it's going to alert you, hey, there's no department with this ID, use something else. This is keynote. I think I went over all the stuff that needs to. Yeah, so the column aliases, you can do as I did, where you add like the as keyword after the column, or you can just add a specific, like a name afterwards, and it will also work. I like to use as because it's a bit more descriptive to what is going on. Yeah, break time, I guess. Yeah. Okay. This class finishes at 2. Yeah. Be back at like 1:20, I guess. So part two, I'm going to talk about like all the concepts of the database system and architecture. Did you talk about who the complainers are going to be? No? Should I pick them? Who's the best at complaining? Should I take at random from Blackboard or something? I'll do it after the class. So we'll just start. So concept of data model is a set of concepts that describe the database, the operations for manipulating structures, and the constraints. So like, you know, should a column allow for null or not, right? And then these constructs are used to define what the database structure is going to be. They include the elements, so like the data types for the columns, as well as the groups of entities, so like the entities, the tables, the relationship between those tables, and all that stuff. And then the constraints specify what the restrictions of what valid data is, and these are enforced all the time. So on insertion, on deletion, when you're updating a row, they are checked. So every operation you do up against the database is going to check that all the constraints that you've put in place are validated and enforced, and not allowed the operation to go through if they are not. So examples of that is, say, foreign keys aren't respected, so they don't correspond to a primary of an editor table. Null checks aren't allowed, so like if you're inserting a null and it can't be null. If you're inserting a type of data that doesn't correspond to what it's allowed for that column, so if you're inserting, say, a number and it has to be a date, stuff like that. Data model operations are like all the operations that refer to the stuff you can do to the database. So retrievals, meaning the select statements, update statements, inserts, deletes, all this stuff. You can also create user-defined operations to do some calculations to make it quicker for you. So like computing the student GPA or updating the inventory, which is basically like stored statements that you can call over and over again, as opposed to just like making them all the time. And then categories of data models. So there's the conceptual level, which is closer to what the users perceive the data to be, and which is what is closest to what data is in real life, right? So this is when you're creating the flowchart where you had like the boxes and the names of the columns and what is going to be in every relation and how they relate to each other. This is like the conceptual, like high-level data model. Then you have like the physical data model, which is all the magic that the database system does for you, which is how does the data get stored into memory, right? Because like have a bunch of bytes, like where database like put that data into, and how does it retrieve it, and all that stuff that is handled by the database system without any like final user interaction. And then we have and then the database kind of relates like the conceptual model that the humans can understand, and they create like some representation in the database system to relate how that relates to how stuff is stored in memory. So schemas versus instances. How database schema, that is like the description of the database. So it includes like the descriptions of what the structure is, what the data types are, all the constraints. You have the schema diagram, which displays like most of the aspects of the database in a visual way, so you kind of understand how the relations are and how they relate to each other. And then you have the schema construct, which is a component of the schema or an object within the schema. So like student course that corresponds to each of the tables. The concept of database state, which is what the data is and how does the database look like at a specific point in time. So that is both like the data, how does the how is the database layout, and the concept of database state is important because say anything goes wrong with your system, a database state is a snapshot that is going to be restored if you know you lose all the data, right? That's the big difference between using databases and using an Excel. You like you keep snapshots of specific like database states. They can happen like every day, can happen every hour, and the database can always be reverted to that previous state if anything goes wrong. So there's database state that refers to what is the current state, and then there's the initial state, which is when basically blank database, right? And then a valid state refers to every state where the data is valid and corresponds to the constraints or satisfies the constraints of the database that you've set up. So a database schema changes very infrequently. So adding a new table, or it should, adding a new table, adding new columns. That's not always the case because, say, you have a client that you're making the database for. There's always like new data that comes up. There's always like new requirements of like, oh, now we need this and now we need to know that. So it does evolve, but it evolves a lot less than the database state, which changes like all the time when you're adding new data into the database or updating it. So the schema is an intention, state is an extension. So the schema is... Yeah. Well, usually a database lives in a server, so there's not local copies that each of the user has that need to be like merged all the time. There's usually like one single database, and then each of the users connects to that database, and there's one single source of truth. If anything crashes, if it crashes on the client side, depending on at what point it crashes, either like those changes that the user made are lost. Say if you're like inserting data, but something goes wrong on your side, all those insertions are lost. If it happens in the side of the server where like the server goes down for some reason or something, then all the connections on all the transactions that are pending are going to fail, and then they need to be like again. If it's like a catastrophical failure where like all data is wiped, then you need to, not only do you need to restart the server, you also need to reset to like a previous state. Did that answer your question? Okay. So an example of a database schema is, yeah, we have a student that has a name and a student number and blah, blah, blah. And a course. So we have each of the relations and we have each of the columns. Then a database state is all the data. So the three schema architecture is a description of this stuff that I've been talking about, which is the three different levels of how data is described, or how the database is described. So we have the internal schema that refers to how the data is stored, how the computer keeps track of where all the data is stored. So like where is all this stuff in memory actually? This is all like some smart people figured this out, and where are the best algorithms to recover data, and how is the best way to like store data in memory, so you don't worry about it. It's all the stuff that happens underneath the hood. Then you have like the conceptual schema, which is what you actually define when you're creating a database. So like all like the structure of what tables are going to be, what the columns are going to be, what is going to be each field, all that stuff. And then you have the internal schema, which is describes the viewers, or what the users are going to view. So it's usually like the same as the conceptual schema, or depends on permissions of the user, like what tables can they see, all that stuff. So there needs to be some sort of like connection between like all these different layers and all the stuff that is happening behind the scenes. Is you make a request, the query comes into the database, it's going to interpret, okay, what does the user want? It's going to convert that something that the computer understands, and it's going to run against the internal schema, and then it's going to retrieve the data that corresponds to that query, and then it's going to give you back the data that corresponds to whatever you asked for. So this is data independency is these layers are like somewhat independent for each other, from each other. So what gets updated is the map of between the layers, as opposed to if you change how the conceptual schema is, the physical layer doesn't need to be changed, right? So again, this is all like very theoretical. You're not going to go into it, but all these layers are somewhat independent from each other, because say you update what the conceptual schema is, where you like add more tables or change the name of a column, the database internally is going to be like, okay, this column now is named this thing. Now I'm going to update how that relates to what the storage in memory is, and the user doesn't need to worry about it. So it's going to update the mapping between them, and all you need to think about is like, oh, I've changed the column, the name of a column, and then internally the database is going to be like, okay, every time they refer to this column now, they were actually referring to the other one. And likewise, if you're changing how the database, if the database changes how they retrieve data or how the data is organized in memory, the conceptual model should stay the same. So you could change database systems, and you're always accessing data as a user in the same way. You're making the same requests. You're like selecting the columns and selecting the tables, but underneath the hood, what's happening is different. Boring. Yeah. So, what you actually need to know from this is, fuck, I'm being recorded, so everything. No. Well, like, this is the basics of for you to understand what is going on, right? Because if you go into a company, you know, like the basics of like, you just make the request, and then you're like, anything goes wrong, or you need to like do some more complex stuff, and you don't actually understand what's beneath it, right? Then it's you're not gonna be that good. This is going to be repeated throughout the semester, so you don't need to like know all the theory from day one. It is a lot of stuff. And it's hard to map against like the actual practical stuff if I'm just like talking about like, oh yeah, look at all this database stuff. So this is going to like be repeated over the semester, and then hopefully as you like do all the practical stuff, you can like vaguely remember that I talked about it, all the theory stuff. Yeah, but I need to talk about all this stuff, so. I also prefer to just be running queries in the database and trying how to use it. But yeah, like from a professional standpoint, it's like this stuff isn't something that I like think about on my everyday basis. Like, but I know it, right? But every time I'm like connecting to the database, I think, like, oh yeah, I'm making a request, and then I'm authenticating myself, and if it's just like, I click a button. That's it. That's as far as I need to think about it. If, you know, connection fails, then I need to like figure out why, and then it's like better to like have the concepts. It's the same with like programming. You don't really like know anything about like memory management or anything when you're like programming some like JavaScript stuff, right? But if you get like a buffer error out of range or something like that, then you understand, okay, because I'm accessing a position, but it's out of like the memory of the that's allocated to space. So then, you know, I need to do something. So with everything, it's like you need to know the theoretical foundations to like be good at doing it. But you can just be like a code monkey and just I type the commands into the computer and it does stuff. But yeah, that's the thing. Like, and that's also why you're taking like higher education, right? Because you could be doing like a 6-month coding boot camp or something, or just learning it by yourself online. And it's like, oh, I know how to type commands to like do some stuff in the database, but then it's like, oh, do something more complex. I don't know. I just know how to type the command. So, yeah, this theory stuff is almost over, and then I'm gonna go back to the other slides and run the practical stuff. Yeah, so the last stuff you need to know is database management system server. So like the database is always running on a server. That's why you need to install a bunch of different stuff when you're doing the assignments. It's because it's actually creating a localhost instance of a database server, and the queries that you're making are running up against the server, so you're making a request to the server. You haven't learned any of this stuff, but you will during the semester. And then the server processes the request, passes it to the database runs the query, gets the data, and then takes the data, gives it back, and then the server sends the information back to the client. And then there's usually like a bunch of different layers to this. So if you're like, say like programming your own server that makes requests to a database, then you're using some sort of a layer that creates that request to make to the server, because there has to be specific standards to how those requests are made. So it's your library that like abstracts all that stuff away. You just write the command and then hit send, type send, and then that makes the request, and then all the stuff happens. That's enough. I'm tired of talking. You can check all the extra theory in the slides and ask me if you have any questions. This is pretty much like all the stuff that I need to talk about. History of data. Look, there are a lot of different types of database management systems. A lot of them were like not really used anymore, made before I was born. This usually you use nowadays is like MySQL and Postgres is like stuff that is used for like more complex stuff. And yeah, that's what I've taught today. So I'm going to go back to the other slides and do some more like practical work. So these were like the practice questions. I don't know what the objective of these were, if it's like supposed to be homework or something, but I'm just going to do them here because I don't think they're supposed to be in the lab. And it's also like a lot of times I feel like professors just kind of like leave you to like figure this stuff out, and then you don't really ever like learn the right way of doing it. You just learn from like some Indian guy on YouTube or so I'm just gonna do it, and then you can maybe do some of the other practice stuff yourselves. So does the following select statement execute successfully? So we copy this and we put it. If you have the slides in your laptop, it's here. I'll just use my off screen to copy stuff from. What the hell? Okay. But will this run? Is the question. We kind of need to look at the table. So, employees table, and we're fetching the first name, employee ID, and salary as the sal. Employees. First name, employee ID, and salary. So it should run, right? Unless there's like some... Yeah, it does run. So you get the first name, you get the employee ID, and then you get the salary. So it uses an alias here to rename the column from salary to sal. The other thing is selecting everything from employees. So yeah, use the star symbol, and then you get all the columns, all the data. And then there are some errors in the statement. Can you identify them? Can you identify what the error is here? It's surely formatted, so I can do this. This is why it's like easier to figure out what the errors are when it's properly indented, as opposed to just having a mess in one line. What's the problem here? You're running the query, you're gonna get the error, and then you can kind of try to understand what's wrong. So have an error in your syntax. Use the right syntax to use 12. So one of the problems is there's no comma, and then we don't use X, we use the, and then there's still errors because an alias always has to be one single word, and here we have two. We can do this. Unknown column cell, and then cell also doesn't exist, so you need salary, and now it works. So there are quite a few problems here. It was the comma. For the mutation symbol, it's the star, and then for an alias, you need to use quotes when it's multiple words, or just use one symbol, single identifier. Show the structure of the employee table. Create a query to display the last name for each employee. Provide an alias, start date, and hire date. Okay. It's 10 minutes until, so we can do some of this. So, show the structure of the employees table. Create a query to display the last name, job, hire date, employee number for each employee, with the employee number appearing first. Provide an alias, start date, and hire date. How would you start to approach this? Everybody's like tired of shit. I'll just do it. So when you're interpreting a action like this, first you need to figure out what the tables that are related to the relation or what the query is. So it's employees. So then you can... I usually just start with like selecting everything from employees. Um, and then identify what the items are that need to be displayed. So last name, job, hire date, employee number. Last name, job, hire date, employee number. Job ID, and then hire date, and then employee ID, I guess. Then you can do this like iteratively, right? So you like, first you start something that is like close, and then you try to like perfect your query until you get exactly what you want. It also says that the employee number should appear as the number one, is the first thing, so it's here. It also says that hire date should have an alias called start date. Okay, so we're a bit closer to what we want, and then it says that job ID good enough. Yeah, I haven't told you how to do joins. That's it. So, show the structure of employees, create a query with the last name, the job, the hire date, and the employee number. And then the employee number should be first, and then provide an alias. So hire date as start date. So that's it. And then create the query to display unique jobs and display a query to display. Yeah, that's enough. You can do the other two yourself. See if you got anything from this class. Yeah. Cool.